Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tima Owens Daily, and we are back to review the 18th race of the Formula One 2024 season, the Singapore Grand Prix. To do this, I'm not joined by the usual suspects, as they're both off gallivanting elsewhere today. So instead, I am joined by Nathan Hugh and Jonathan Koo. Welcome back to the podcast, both of you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Overall, been quite okay. We enjoyed the last couple of races, but then Singapore could have been better. We were at a watch party, but true to form, as you mentioned off the recording, nothing happened. True to form, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Todd's law. Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. Like what Joan mentioned, we were at a watch party as well. Oh, it was nice. Nothing beats watching a Formula One race with a live audience. We've been doing all right so far. I mean, in terms of, we started the second season ever since we were on the pod last year. So thanks again for having us for the Singapore Grand Prix. It's always a special one for us. It's the closest one where we can call it our home race in a sense. We are both Malaysian. So I think we've been doing all right.
Pleasure. And before we get into the Grand Prix itself, we do have a couple of bits of news. The first of which going back to Baku. Because McLaren's rear wing from that Grand Prix has been deemed illegal, and essentially the low downforce wing used at tracks like Monza and Baku were found to have cornered deflection under load, leading off drag as it flexed. So while it passed the static test along its main plane, the edges have been brought to contention after several teams obviously noticed it, because they're always paying attention to these sorts of things. And basically, McLaren can continue to use the wing, but must change it so that it does not behave in the same manner as was seen in Baku. So it's one of these kind of not in the spirit of the rules, but technically legal sort of situations. So that has been rectified.
Favorite type of rule interpretation. Technically legal, yeah. But should be illegal.
Yeah, a little bit. It's the most obvious extreme example of that being the fan car many, many years ago. technically, yeah. We're not doing anything wrong here, but fine, we'll stop using it. So just a little bit of housekeeping on that one. But then fast forwarding to something I want to talk to both of you about here, which is the second piece of news, which is Verstappen was fined for swearing in the press conference pre-race. He was summoned to the stewards for language used in Thursday's conference, and his fine is to accomplish some work of public interest, essentially some form of community service, which he did have to do once before after his altercation with Ocon following the Brazilian Grand Prix in 2019. Which, that one, fair enough, I think. Verstappen amusingly explained to the FIA that the word was ordinary in speech as he learned it, which basically means when he was growing up, learning English, Joss was using that quite a bit.
It kind of explains his background with Joss Verstappen quite a lot, actually.
Yes. This has not gone down well with other drivers, with Hamilton, Leclerc and Norris in particular all being vocal about it, with the former branding it a bit of a joke and not appreciating how NBS went about approaching this, which I've seen his comments and can probably understand. So my question to you two, and I'll come to you, Nathan, first, is this necessary, all the bigger fish to fry in Formula One, especially with Verstappen saying that stuff like this might speed up his exit out of F1, and he also pointed out that Sainz got fined €25,000 for crossing the track after his crash in qualifying, despite there being no cars there, being red flagged, and drivers not being stupid and being able to see when it's safe and when it's not. What do you make of all of it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to watch Formula One for long to know that the FIA just being the FIA at times. I think I read a report somewhere that actually the drivers are going to get together for like a private meeting because of this whole debacle kind of thing. Like drivers, like they're on adrenaline. And in Max's case, yeah, he grew up English. I'm not sure whether it was his first language. I mean, it's Max, right? This isn't the first time where like he swears on the radio in a press conference, pre-race, post-race or whatever. So yeah, I just found it so odd. I mean, yeah, so there was just a really funny incident. So I completely agree with the drivers, like, it's just completely unnecessary, but yeah, I mean, the FIA being the FIA, so yeah.
Jonathan, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at comments from the GDPA president Alex Woods, who said that Gunther Steiner has been using the using curse words all the time. He's been a star for Drive to Survive. That's probably the main reason why so many people love Haas as it is. He didn't really get to serve anything. So, I mean, granted, he is a team principal rather than a driver. But I
Still
don't
gets
really see.
broadcast. I can't believe no one's actually mentioned it before, not that I've seen so far. Actually, that is quite a good point if Steiger can get away with it with
If you don't mind
years and
Steiger,
years of it,
yeah,
then why couldn't the
exactly,
staff?
yeah.
It's years in it, and then it's been broadcast all over Netflix and everything. So I don't,
Yeah. Or is it
I
because
fail to
he
see.
switched the U for an O, so technically it's not swearing, but everyone just reads between the lines? But Verstappen also brought up this great point of if you don't want people to see it or hear it, then why are you broadcasting it? It brings up the point, like you say, with Steiner for Netflix. It draws people in, it helps build the personality, it helps them build their authentic selves, which is why the fans love the drivers in the first place and those behind the scenes. Yeah, a bit of an odd one, that one. Very, very interesting. Any other last points on that before we get into the Grand Prix?
I think not that, but on your other point for Sainz crossing the track, I get that is a bit more defensible because usually it's the name of safety and Formula One tries to take safety very, very strictly. But as you previously mentioned, because there weren't any cars on the track at the time, so there could be mitigating factors. But I think on that one, it's a bit more defensible just on the grounds of safety. It's not an entertainment thing, but you just want people to be as safe as possible. So a bit more defensible, but yeah, still absurd. Classic FIA.
Classic FIA indeed. And we'll get into the Grand Prix then, as that's all of the confirmed news that we have for this Grand Prix. And not too much to say, which was highlighted by the fact that this is the first Singapore Grand Prix, as we talked about just before we recorded, Jonathan, with zero safety cars or yellow flags. So it's going to be interesting to see how much mileage we can get out of this podcast, but I'm sure we'll manage. So we'll dive headfirst into our team-by-team analysis, and we'll start with Red Bull. And I'll kick things off here before throwing it to you, because Verstappen P2, very decent job considering, and Perez in P10. And Perez is where my focus is going to be here from it because he still hasn't finished inside the top five since Miami. Couldn't get past Colapinto for the majority of the race and was fighting him for P10, which he did eventually get P10. And this is something I heard on another podcast earlier. Perez in a Red Bull is only beating Albon in a Williams 4-3 in qualifying in the last seven Grand Prix. Albon's been ahead of him in Singapore, Hungary, and Silverstone, whereas Perez has been ahead in Baku, Italy, although they're only separated by one place there, Zandvoort and Spa. With all the talk, which we will get to later when we talk about them, with regards to Red Bull, Ricciardo, second tier Derby, and all the rest of it, why is no one talking about Perez in this way? And what do you two think about this?
I saw an even more startling stat. Before Sargeant was dropped, Sargeant has outqualified Perez more often than he's outqualified Albon, which I thought was amazing. Which I'm not sure what that says. Is that, is Sargeant
It's a
underrated?
confusing
Is
diagram right there.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure what's going on. And with the recent news that Christian Horner admitted that they've diagnosed the development path of the Red Bull to have all gone awry since Barcelona 2023, I think, which Perez said they have started having issues there. It brings to mind when Toto Wolff said like Perez was having issues in the car and Horner just brushed him off. So
Paris is right. Paris is
yep.
right.
Turns out Toto Wolff was correct with that.
Yeah, I mean, when you paint it that way, in the sense that Paris fighting F1 in the Williams and Sargeant are qualifying Paris in the Williams, it's just insane. Yeah, sure, the car has been developed in a way that doesn't suit Paris's style, right? Sure, he did well. I mean, damage limitation got into the points at one point. I think Max drove a decent race. I mean, Lando was like a rocket ship down into turn one, and then he just went away with the lead. On a weekend where he needed to, close the gap in terms of like reduce the gap in terms of points between him and Lando, I think he did all right. Yeah, I mean, nothing much to say. I mean, Max drove well, Perez did an okay race to recover back into the points. Yeah.
Yeah, Verstappen very much putting on a championship drive there because while the win clearly wasn't on for him in Singapore, again, weirdly, the only track on the current calendar that he's never won at, he's still got a 52-point lead in the World Drivers' Championship, which is what he needs. I mean, six races to go, yes, it's doable, but he's doing the maximum he can do to prevent Norris or anyone else from overhauling him in the driver's standing. So Max Verstappen doing Max Verstappen things there. We'll move on to Ferrari though, as there's probably a little more to talk about, perhaps. Leclerc P5, Sainz P7. Leclerc essentially, and Sainz to be fair as well, compromised by qualifying, but sort of managed the best they were able to with damage limitation there. Leclerc took blame for his own qualifying performance, and it was an unfortunate incident for Sainz, but at least Leclerc had a lovely overtake eventually on Hülkenberg on lap 28 going into turn 17. It was very much just a, I'm going past now, get out of my way, Mr. Hülkenberg. And once he did that, he was able to kind of get up the road a bit further, and it was a shame he couldn't get to Russell in the end, but it was not too bad. What did you two make of it?
On the track where it's difficult to overtake and with no safety car, yellow flags this year. I mean, their pro qualifying really compromised them. I mean, Sainz had a weird spinning crash into the barriers, and then Leclerc just bad luck track limits, didn't really set the time in qualifying. Yeah, I think Sainz did okay. I mean, they obviously pitted him early to allow him to be in clean air, so you know he can drive his own race, but left him out way, way, way too. It was an old hearts towards the end, so there was not much of a fighting chance. I think Leclerc did all right. Like, yeah, he was stuck behind Hülkenberg and Alonso, and then after that, took a long time to get past Hülkenberg. He did decent enough to catch up to Russell, but I think that Mercedes just looked a bit quicker in the corners. For some reason, they had like better traction, even though I think he was on fresher tires or more or less the same kind of tires. So yeah, there was a nice battle between Russell and Mac, Russell and Charles. So yeah.
I think the qualifying mistakes in 9th and 10th really hampered Ferrari. I would think they probably could have gotten at least 5th and 6th, row 3. But then like from there, the podium could have been a possibility if not two top five finishes. But yeah, so Sainz came in like super early to try the undercut, but I think his passage through the back markers and traffic really hurt his race later on. And left him with not enough tires and too big of a gap to get with the others. And there wasn't much point pitting him for a second time at that point because you just lose track position as well as having to make up time anyway. Then for Leclerc, I think I was surprised that they were trying an overcut strategy, which yeah, it worked out in the end. I think surprisingly, Ferrari seems to be getting their strategy relatively correct nowadays. Surprise, surprise. But yeah, it was nice for him to easily catch Hamilton. He just missed out on catching Russell in the end, which I think by the time he got there, the tires were starting to drop off a bit. So I actually stated during our watch party, like if Leclerc manages to pass Russell, I would think he deserves a shout for driver of the day, especially from a recovery of from 9th and the early DRS train behind Hockenberg, which eventually he did manage to pass Alonso, which I think was quite decent. So decent race, especially recovery, but yeah, tough to manage much after a poor qualifying.
It was a bit of a what-if race in a lot of ways for them, minimized very much by the qualifying as mentioned there, and I think you could definitely tell the tyres were just starting to wean off a bit towards the end there. You saw him get to just under a second, I think, to Russell, and then a couple of laps later he's back up to around 1.5 seconds, thinking, oh, the tyres have just given up there, unfortunately for him, but still respectable considering all of the drama and everything he had to do to get there in the first place. And hopefully this isn't something where they get to the end of the season and it's cost them those extra few points they need to get either into P2 or P1 in the Constructors' Championship. Mercedes, meanwhile, Russell P4, Hamilton P6, bit of an odd one considering where they started, but I'm going to refer to them not as the Silver Arrows for this section because they were the Green Arrows this weekend with their nice little livery that they had on there. So that was quite a fun way to try and
Which
differentiate them from the Aston Martins under the light there.
yeah.
But yeah, bit of an odd one because Hamilton obviously qualified in P3 and then started on soft tyre, which didn't really work, which he was obviously unhappy with, and believe he was then calling too early, despite making those soft tyres last a lot longer than we would believe they should be able to last. And from there, it was all a bit mishandled from where I was sitting, and Russell was again able to sort of George Russell things of later, be the best of the rest and in the perfect position should anything go wrong up front. It didn't happen this weekend, but very much benefited from Ferrari getting in their own way in qualifying. But just a bit of an odd one, and yet sort of finishing where you'd expect them. Very kind of Mercedes of this year.
But see, while the livery itself was quite attractive, like when they were celebrating Petronas' anniversary, It was a bit hard to differentiate them from the Aston Martins under the floodlights. So yeah, I think everybody was playing the game like, oh, is that Alonso or is that Hamilton? Who knows? So I think I wasn't sure what was the thinking behind starting Hamilton on softs. I'm guessing like they would expect him either to either make up ground really quickly and possibly get into a podium position early in the race before having to drop off. But yeah, I think at that point they kind of hamstrung themselves. They were left with no good options because if they went to soft to mediums, it definitely wouldn't have made it to the end and probably had a two stop or a really long stint on hards, which yeah, that's what eventually happened. So probably it's just the best possible option having started on softs. For
Yeah, I
Russell,
think they wanted the softs to come in a bit there, but I think he would have had to propel himself into the lead straight away, try and sprint off as far as he could, and then try the undercut on Norris and Verstappen. But the soft tyre just was not the right tyre to start this Grand Prix on. So as soon as they realised that, it kind of went downhill. But then, like you said, the strategy from then on was just called a bit curiously because it just seemed a bit all too soon, and then having to make it last unnecessarily long time and. All very curious, but you were saying about Russell.
It's like which I made in the end is like Mercedes not really making the best strategy calls there. So and then at that point, Hamilton was just probably just looking towards the next race at that point, just salvaging a few points. For Russell, I would think he had a decent enough race. I think as you mentioned that he was just there, best of the rest, ready to capitalize on anything, which again at Singapore you would expect there for something to happen, but yeah, surprisingly nothing happened. So yeah, that's where he ended up. I think his defense with Leclerc closing in on him was pretty good, especially I think calling back to mind last year when he crashed out trying to chase down Sainz for the lead on the last lap. So probably a bit of a redemption moment for him there, and decent enough points for fourth, and then to add more points to Mercedes tally, maybe trying to close in for third and make a fight out of it with Ferrari.
Possibly,
Yeah, I
possibly.
feel
I mean,
like.
I reckon that might be a bit of an outside chance at this point for them, but they definitely haven't got anything to fear from Aston Martin from behind. But they've also got this perfect position of they've got nothing to lose but everything to gain. So why not try and spoil the party up front if they can a little bit and just, you know, do classic Mercedes things in that way? You got anything to
Yeah,
add there, Nathan?
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with the sentiment. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, it's where I expected them to end up, but it's also not where I expected them to end up. So yeah, they definitely killed Hamilton's race by pitting him so early, right? I get you want to be on a soft, you know, maybe the leaders crashed out or something happens. But yeah, the soft tires did not work out. Everybody who started on the softs, like I think Ricardo started on the softs, went for mediums, it went on a two stop, didn't really work
It's a
out.
whole other story later that we'll get to, but yeah, just how great that strategy
Exactly.
was.
Yeah. And then you could see when Hamilton went on the hards, he was struggling like mad. Like there was no traction. It was really tricky. Yeah, I like to call out George defense against Charles, yes. Yeah, it was great considering that he crashed out last year in Singapore as well. It's, you know, with the walls and everything, they say like Singapore is just Monaco with the walls. But it's basically like a version of Monaco. So yeah, I mean, kudos to him. Brilliant defense actually. Because Charles obviously was coming quite quick for P4. But yeah,
I
overall, I
think
think it was a
Hamilton's
decent
strategy
weekend.
was one of those ones that we saw with some other teams, as we'll get to with McLaren in particular in a minute, with Piastri, where had it been any other Singapore Grand Prix, it might have worked because something would have happened to bring out either a yellow flag, a VSC, or a safety car, but it just never did, and that's what ultimately compromised them. And in some ways, you can't blame them for thinking that way because, again, it's Singapore. Usually, something happens.
I think like before
But
this race, before this race, statistically, every Singaporean Grand Prix had a safety car, so it was only natural that people were hoping for it, but yeah, it's just weird.
I think everybody was hoping for the lizard from FP3 to make an appearance on top of the timesheets again.
So that would have been quite the effort for fastest lap at the end there if we've got the lizard to do that instead of Ricardo. Moving on to McLaren though, Norris P1, Piastri P3, Norris in an absolutely dominant drive again, kind of repeating what he did in Zandvoort, but he nearly on at least two occasions didn't make it with some narrow escapes, one of which at turn 14, where he sustained some minor damage to his front wing. And if you could tell from when they were watching it back in the cool down room, just following the end of the race, that Verstappen was really wishing that that had been a bit more serious than it was, because that would have been quite helpful for him in his championship. But a very commanding drive from Norris, and quite surprising how easy it was for him. It's interesting how well the car and he suited the track as they did in Zandvoort. But he's in more degree here than it was there. And Piastri, again, another driver with a strategy where if something did happen, he would be there to capitalize, but just didn't come to fruition. The couple of interesting stats I did see was that it's Norris's fifth pole position, and he did actually manage to convert it to A, leading into turn one, which he managed in Monza, but then obviously lost it. But then he actually got to the end of the first lap, still in P1. So that was a nice achievement for him to find it, luck after God knows how many attempts. And interestingly, this is the first back-to-back win for McLaren since 2012, with Austin and Brazil, with Hamilton and Button respectively. So this is a record broken there, in terms of, that's a bit of a drought. What do you think of McLaren there? Easily going into the next weekend.
Yep, first off, he finally led into turn one and doesn't lose the lead after lap one. So hats off to Lando. I was kind of surprised he was able to build such a huge gap. I wasn't expecting it. I was literally thinking like, yeah, he's gonna bottle it. He's gonna lose the lead down to lap one. So brilliant drive by Norris. Just got denied a grand slam because he lost out in the fastest lap towards the end. Oscar, they were really gambling for a safety car that never came. So if they pitted him a little bit earlier, it could have been the McLaren 1-2. So yeah, I mean, who knows, right? But yeah, overall good drive.
I'm
Anything
not
to add to
sure. Yeah, I'm not sure whether Oscar could have salvaged second, because I think the gap to Max was quite big, and I don't think the time differences in their laps probably could have made in second. I think unless there was a late safety car and probably something else. But yeah, I think they as previously mentioned, Piastri was just there in the event there was a safety car, and because he was quite safe to Russell in fourth, so they were like, yeah, you know what, we could risk it for a 1-2. If not, he gets third, which I think, yeah, that's in the end, that's what happened. And with Norris, I think that was probably the most commanding drive of his career so far, probably besides some close brushes with the wall. Because I would think right after the first stops, he emerged basically right in front of Piastri. He's basically a full pit stop ahead of everybody by that point. I was like, no, damn. It's basically, unless there's divine intervention, there's nothing that's going to stop it.
Yeah, there
But
was indeed going to be a lizard getting in the way of him there at that time.
it's good drive for McLaren, another 40 points on the board. And yeah, just Lando Norris just lost out on a grand slam due to a late race fastest lap from some shenanigans we'll come back to later.
Excellent shenanigans they were too, but we'll get to them in due course. We've got one team beforehand that we're going to talk about, which shouldn't take too long, which is Aston Martin. Alonso finished in P8, Stroll down in P14. Pretty much a great driving strategy for Alonso this weekend overall, I think. Solid points on the board for him in a car that we know is not where they want it to be. But if anyone's going to get the maximum out of it, it's going to be Alonso. Lance Stroll, on the other hand, I mean, no one knows what the hell he's doing most of the time anyway, including Lance Stroll, but he does now hold a new record of most race starts without a fastest lap, which is 161 Grand Prix, which, dear Lord, he's been there that long, but also, is that not quite amusing? Any thoughts from either of you two on Aston Martin? Not necessarily Stroll, because there's probably not much to say there, really, is there? Aside from, why is he still here?
I mean, for Stroll's side, in a way, I guess he just really had a nothing race. It's like he didn't do anything good, he didn't do
As
anything
much with
bad.
the other 160 odd country that he's been in,
Yeah.
yes.
I think for Stroll, like, there have been some moments, like his pole and near win at Turkey, like that was a close call. And like, I think he actually would have deserved that win. And yeah, he did get some podiums here and there, which, yeah, was they were deserved at the time. But yeah, most of the time he's just there for the most part, and then he probably has ultimate job security. So he knows he's not gonna get fired.
The one
But
driver without a contract because it's not necessary.
yeah, it's like I always find it amusing whenever the race has
driver predictions. Stroll always has an asterisk there. It's like to be confirmed, but pretty much confirmed. Yeah. So yeah, Stroll had nothing much to comment on that. I felt Alonso's battle with Hülkenberg and Leclerc was quite interesting for a while. Especially Alonso just seemed to have really struggled behind Hülkenberg. And yeah, until he eventually got passed by Leclerc right before he entered this entered the pits. And then eventually he did get past Hülkenberg after the pit stops, but then he lost out to Leclerc, which, I mean, fair enough. It's a Ferrari who's much faster than Aston Martin, so I can't fault him for that. So decent solid drive from Alonso, and overall some points in the bag. Nothing more to be said.
Anything you want to add on that,
Yeah.
Nathan, or has Jonathan pretty much served it up perfectly for you?
I mean, yeah, I really couldn't make out what Lance was doing because he was pretty much just invisible throughout the whole race. So I couldn't, I don't even know what he was doing. There was no crash, there was no contact, he was just doing a race.
Mean, to be fair,
Alonso,
that's
yeah, I
good for
mean,
him. It didn't crash. That's always positive.
I mean, yeah, that is true. I think for Alonso, yeah, great drive, good undercut on Hülkenberg as well. I think overall, yeah, not bad. I think he also did a good job in qualifying as well to put himself in that position. Yeah, I mean, pretty much what you said, John. So there's nothing much else I would add.
That's all right. I think we're all going to have a bit more to say on this next team as we get to Minardi, Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, RB, and Tsunoda P12, Ricciardo P18. Tale of two halves over the weekend, if you look purely from a performance perspective, because they were very impressive in FP1 and FP2, but then dropped off massively for the rest of the weekend. And yeah, they messed up Ricciardo's strategy massively. I mean, Yuki's as well to an extent. And he fell down the order in the last stages of the race while on medium tyre after starting on the soft. I don't know why they changed one to medium, because as you were hinting at earlier, Jonathan, that's not going to last the whole race. You're going to have to switch over at some point. And they should have pitched him a lot sooner as well, considering that they could clearly see the soft wasn't going anywhere. Musing probably should have pitted him sooner than Hamilton was pitted, but again, completely different car, different strategies, all the rest of it. He then pitted, obviously, for a new set of soft tyres and stole the fastest lap on the final lap of the Grand Prix, which, amusingly, is now not only the fastest lap of this Grand Prix, it's a new track record at Singapore, taking the record from Hamilton last year by over a second, which is phenomenal. As a result, as you mentioned earlier, not only denied Norris his first Grand Prix slam, but also denied McLaren their first Grand Prix slam since Mika Hakkinen in 1998 and 1993. So you can keep that one going as well. A bit of talk, and I've read a couple of things as well about should this be allowed in terms of team orders and that sort of thing, with Ricciardo potentially helping. We don't know how much yet, Verstappen with the championship. But from a official rule point of view, and we're going very much back to the top of this episode where we're talking about McLaren with their rear wing. There's nothing against the rules to say that the team couldn't do what they did with Ricciardo. And it's also definitively hard to prove if accused. So while it may be little obvious what was going on, there's nothing technically wrong with it. And Ricciardo did manage to get driver of the day as well. And we'll get into his whole thing in a second. But in terms of the Grand Prix, who wants to jump in first there?
Dang, all the legalese term, technically, definitively accused,
I love a
proved. But I
technicality,
mean,
what can I say?
yeah. But I mean, you raised a really good point, right? There's nothing in the rules that says that another team can't help out another team in the championship. And if another team accuses, let's say, oh, Daniel handed Max the championship, you can't prove that. It's just only one point, right? So yeah, that's that. I mean, I'm a McLaren fan, so I really wasn't, I'm not sure how I felt when, like,
Well, I
McLaren.
say it to you, the Norris and Stenner have both said that they don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, there's nothing in the rules saying that an entity can't own two teams. There's obviously no collusion, but there's obviously you can't really prove that. And Stenner even saying afterwards that we'll just have to make sure that it doesn't come down to one point in the championship, you know? So it's all these things, but I think they've taken it on the chin. So if they can do it, then maybe you can too.
I mean, I was a little bit disappointed because that could have been Norris's grand slam. I think it was the first grand slam
I think
for
that's why
Ricciardo
it's
in
so
a little
amusing.
bit. I know, so maybe it goes down the wire down to one point. But I think in terms of the race, yeah, what the heck was that strategy putting Ricciardo in soft and then the mediums and Okay, so that was Mikado's side of the garage. I have no idea why they did that. I mean, yeah, maybe you want to try something different, but yeah, that strategy just makes no
It's
sense to me.
different
She
and it's
started
just
with,
stupid.
yeah, it's just like the theme for V Cup the whole season so far. And with Yuki as well, like it's so weird, with the tie choices. Yeah, I mean it resulted in Daniel having like a really lonely race, and yeah, maybe yeah, just getting the fastest lap for whatever reason. We will continue that later. But yeah, John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I guess Yuki just really dropped off, even because I think he had a decent qualifying. He qualified like P8. And so he did make Q3, but somehow just the race pace wasn't there, and it would definitely wasn't helped by the strategy. Not sure what V Cup was thinking. I'm not sure what they're thinking at all. But yeah, I think at that point, I think the only other point to note from Yuki's race was he had like a team orders call, to get the drivers reversed, which I mean, fair enough. Yuki was the faster driver and on better tires, so fair enough. But yeah, like they were outperformed by Colapinto, the remaining Williams driver with nothing to lose. So I'm not sure what that's I've got to say. So not a good race for RB. As for Ricardo, again, questionable strategy. No idea what was going on there. And definitely the fastest lap thing was I'm not sure. I would agree that it's not illegal or against any of the rules, but it's definitely sketchy and probably against the spirit of competition, which if any Formula One fan would know, the other teams would always complain. Like I think back in the olden days when Ferrari was the dominant team, there were always suggestions that Sauber would just be there to hold up the other drivers whenever anybody would pass.
I think it's one of those
Yeah.
things where it's accepted, and you saw that with how McLaren handled it after the Grand Prix. And it's not the first time we've seen this with Red Bull and the sister team in terms of making it easier for certain cars to get past them, in terms of making their way up through the field or when they're being lapped and then potentially having to hold up someone else or this sort of thing. But as I said, it's one of those things that's really difficult to conclusively prove that this was the
Yeah.
intent there, which getting more my kind of legal caps on at the same time here to try and make sure I don't do anything awkward here. But yeah, Yuki in particular was just very odd because even though we know that car definitely doesn't have the pace, you would have thought that he would have maybe finished in P10 if he started P8. Like you saw where
Yeah.
Alonso and Hülkenberg qualified, you're not expecting to finish there, barring something going wrong. And they still were able to finish inside the points. So the fact that RB fumbled that one, it was bad enough they're messing up Ricardo's entire race. But for them to fumble with Yuki as well in that way was just really sloppy from them. In terms of the elephant in the room that we're going to have to talk about now, came into the weekend and you could be perfectly understood for thinking that we'd all missed an announcement because the way that the
Yes,
media
yes. That
and the
is a
fans
very, very
then were
well placed
just.
point. Yes,
Yeah,
correct.
it was pretty much the most open, unspoken secret in the paddock there. I was like,
It felt
is
like,
it
yeah, I
like you
mean,
think?
you
Yeah.
think about it. Everyone knew months in advance that Kimi Antonelli was going to Mercedes, and then we got it announced. And then
Yep.
everyone pretty much knew that Adrian Newey was going to Aston Martin. And then we did get that announced. And
Yep.
then we're going there this weekend, and we're like, so where's that infamous breaking news F1 post? It didn't have it. And I mean, it's probably come out now whilst we're all recording this, or it's going to be just as I finish editing it, thinking this is perfect, as is always the way. But there was none of that. But everyone was treating it as if this was Ricciardo's last Grand Prix. And if it is, he seems to be in more of an accepting place of it. I don't think everyone else is, really. Just because if we'd been told going into the weekend, then maybe that's one thing and we could have all got behind it a little bit more. But the fact that it wasn't, I think, is where the bittersweetness comes into it for so many people, probably including Ricardo on some level. Because as fans, you always, unless there's some sudden brutal thing like with Sargeant, but that's understandable at the same time, even though I think that should have been done over the summer break instead of giving him Zandvoort. You like to say goodbye to a driver, and you know when you're able to do that. It's usually Abu Dhabi. And I don't see the advantage of putting in another driver, even if it is Lawson, for six Grand Prix. What's he going to gain here? And it does, and if you're getting rid of him before Austin, which is going to be packed in large part due to the number of fans Ricardo has in that part of the US, never mind the US
Oh,
in general,
yes.
especially when you have the alleged kind of story around Formula One talking to Red Bull about keeping Perez because of the Mexican Grand Prix and how much money he brings in for them. For them to do that potentially and allegedly, but not to Ricardo and Austin, seems like the biggest kind of faux pas you could make on a corporate side of things, which is what Formula One is, even more so now than it ever has been in a lot of ways. It baffles me. And you think, what on earth are you doing here? You look at the strategy for the weekend and think that was bad enough, but what about all the stuff behind the scenes? It's just an absolute mess. And ethical quandaries aside, with the fastest lap, if that is his last lap in F1, that's quite a fun way to go out as a little bit of a, well, I'm going to risk community service here from the other two if I get it, but a bit of a fuck you to everyone, really, especially McLaren, the team that could have broken him. The team that basically, when he left them, wasn't looked the same since, and go, if Norris does lose by a point, Ricardo goes, I did that to you because I could. And I've got the track record in Singapore in this kind of a car, so that next year, regardless if he's there or not, it will come up on the screen at the start of that Grand Prix saying he holds the fastest lap. And that's just going to be a level of satisfaction that everyone's going to be able to get behind. And regardless of if Verstappen wins the title or not, he'd still deserves the assistance for Ricardo, I think. And yeah, seeing that last lap in F1 be your fastest lap and a new track record in a car that is definitely not meant to be able to do that, a little bit like Magnussen with the Haas there a few years ago, there's worse ways to go, and it's quite a nice little way of potentially impacting the rest of the season where even if he's not there, his shadow is, and I kind of like that if we do have to say goodbye to him now.
I mean, you unpacked so much in what you said. Dang. Okay, I mean, first off, the point that you made about the whole track record, like his legacy is going to be there. Every time he comes back to Singapore, he holds the fastest lap
Well,
ever
hopefully for a little while at least until someone beats it next year, which hopefully they don't.
Exactly, right. For me, I felt like we hit into the weekend almost as if like the announcement has been made, but there was just like an empty canvas of like, I'm sure it's just weird. Everybody went into the weekend on the assumption that this is Daniel Ricciardo's last race, but we never heard anything from WeCom, never heard anything from Red Bull. So it felt weird. So looking at the post race interviews and also the justification as to why he did the fastest lap, if you go on the assumption that this is his final race, then yeah, it totally makes sense, right? You know, he gets to basically cement like it's a new record. And then the thing that you say about McLaren as well totally makes sense right now, right? If Lando loses the championship by 1 point, you know exactly who did it. And then you know going out with a bang, getting driver of the day. Yeah, I think one thing that
Because of
really
Ricardo getting this 1 point as well, or taking this 1 point away, just to interject slightly before you finish there, is that if Norris wins every Grand Prix and sprint now, if Verstappen finishes P2 and all of those, that's still enough for him to win. And it's just one of those things that you can
Exactly.
win everything and it's still not enough. You've got to rely on then Verstappen not doing well in something. And that's assuming Norris is able to win six Grand Prix back to back to back to back to back to back to back. So it's ridiculous how much one fastest lap at the end of a Grand Prix can do that
Changes
kind of
things.
damage to someone. But sorry, continue, Nathan.
I mean, to do that, I don't know, man. It's Lando has everything to lose, but I mean, Daniel, yeah, it's just such a sad way to go, to be honest. It's a PR disaster. I mean, the strategy was a disaster. The race was basically a write-off. But yeah, I mean, I just feel really sad for Daniel to basically, this is his last race weekend potentially. We don't know, right? I mean, the shot of him just sitting in his car for like 10 minutes, rubbing his thigh. Wow, that was so heartbreaking, man. And the emotional post-race interview. You never want to be a guy who doesn't know like where your future is going to be. If you're going to act, just have the decency to say that. it's over. Like, yeah, fine. We can accept it. He can accept it. Move on. You know, have like, you know, very emotional like video and stuff like that. But yeah, that's that.
Yep, I mean, I agree with both of you on that, but I mean, I would like to point out that Minardi, Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, they've been known to just chop and change drivers like that just on the drop of a hat. So it's not unusual for them, especially in the Red Bull family. So I'm like, it's sad, but it's not unfortunate. Like, worst comes to, well,
I think it's
look at
more of the
KTM,
timing
look.
in the season.
Yep, it's definitely the timing of the season, especially quite late on. I remember in 2017, if I'm not wrong at that time, how Gasly got into the team was, I think, Kvyat being dropped, and there was a chop and change over a couple of drivers in 2017 with Kvyat, with Sainz later leaving, and then like Hartley coming in and things like that. So it's not unusual for the organization, but it's just sad for a driver who at one point was the closest driver to the dominant Mercedes in the V6 turbo hybrid era. So it's sad
So
how it ended here.
he's the man that beat Vettel in Equal Machinery when he was
Yeah.
still at Red Bull at kind of his peak
Yeah.
still. And he was one of the few people to beat Mercedes, like you say, during their
Yeah.
dominance. And I think just before we move on, because we do have some other two to talk about, the one other potential silver lining slash going out as much on your own terms as you can in a situation like this is that perhaps Ricardo was offered to stay in RB for next year. But as he said, post race, there's only so long you can fight for P10 when you want to be and you're built to fight for the win that you can take before you just have to leave unless you get that option. So maybe he went to Red Bull and said, you either give me that second seat or I'm just gone because what's the point in me being here fighting for a few points here or there? That's not what I'm here to do. It's what he was there to prove he could do at the end of last year and then this year, which on occasion he has been able to do. But when you're a Grand Prix winner like him, bear in mind, he's still got more Grand Prix victories than Lando and Piastri at this point, as well as many other drivers on the grid. You can understand that and maybe go, you know what, if you're going to do something, do it properly. And that isn't how he wants to do it. So maybe that's partly how he can look back at it and go, well, kind of do the Frank Sinatra my way sort of thing.
Yep,
I'm sure
I
someone will put
mean,
that video together at some point with the song over the top of it.
yeah, I mean, just wish him all the best and hope he finds his seat somewhere else and like and to find success and fulfillment elsewhere. Maybe V8 supercars, maybe IndyCar, why not?
I think the first thing first is like, can someone actually make an official announcement that his time is over?
Yes.
Because
Yeah.
as of
That
now,
would
we still
also
don't
be
know whether like
helpful.
is he still going to be in Austin? It would
Where,
be hella
yeah.
hilarious
Well,
if he
this will
shows
be
up
the
later.
thing now. All of this, and then he turns up in Austin, and just if he rides back into Austin on that horse again, and you go, you
It
know
would be
what?
so
Hero's
funny.
return would be the best goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Williams, we'll get to,
Yeah.
we'll move on. Colapinto P11, Albon DNF. Same for Albon. Kind of looks like his power unit overheated and caused him to plan on lap 15. This is another team that was very strong in all three FP sessions, so it was a shame to see them not coming away with any points. But Pol Pinto, very impressive for me. His third Grand Prix at a race that, at a race venue, sorry, that he's not been to before, and it's known for being one of the toughest Grand Prix on the calendar. Not too bad for P11, despite how he sounded on the team radio following, but I don't know if that was disappointment or just exhaustion at this point. What did you two make of Williams and their Grand Prix?
Yep, I was kind of disappointed for Albon because if I'm not mistaken, he was one of the earliest to pit for his stop. And then I remember like he just severely dropped off after that. I was kind of disappointed to see that his power unit overheated. He probably could have done something there and even probably finish where Colapinto was, roughly around there, maybe even challenge Perez for P10, which would have been a sight to see, a Williams overtaking or challenging a Red Bull for P10. Oh well, we were kind of robbed with that. Colapinto had the dive bomb of a century at the start. I think we were all afraid something massive would have happened, but he pulled it off, which great. Third ever race in challenging conditions, and he did really well. Goes to show what somebody can prove when they have nothing to lose.
Kept Perez at
Yeah.
bay for a long time as well, which considering again, Williams versus Red Bull, Perez really don't like the Williams this year by the look of things. He's going to be really looking at those kind of guys, you. You too,
And
honestly.
I mean next season they will have two Red Bull ex Red Bull drivers over there, like with Sainz and Albon. So should be
You want to put
interesting.
Ricardo in that second Red Bull seat because Perez ain't going to want to be there going, oh, I ain't doing that again for a whole year.
When they fight Williams, then they go hands. But yes. I mean, great drive from Carlo Pinto. We all still need to remember that this is only his third race in what is possibly the most physically demanding track. Hats off, and he had the pace in quali in the race. That dive bomb was epic. Really, really, really. It was controlled. He managed to control the car and not cause contact and everything. Yeah, I think overall was a great race as well. For Albon, yeah, just really unlucky. The car overheated. Can be the case in street tracks where something gets into the power unit or whatever. And yeah, so that was that. But overall, I think it was a good points for Williams as well. Bumps them a little bit
They
further in the constructors, but yeah.
just missed out on the point. They were P11.
Oh, I thought they got points, because Colapinto was running like P9, 10, 11, so I thought they was like in the points. Okay. Got it.
Moving on to Steiko, Bottas P16, Joe 15. That's about it we can say on them, really. The car was reliable, they finished the race, but I really is struggling to find anything to say about them at this point. I went a few races with saying that without having to say that I like their livery. I used that last week. I got nothing on this week. I'm going to save the livery for Austin, maybe. Maybe it looks good there. I don't know, but in Lord, they're having a season.
We can just move on. Like, I think they just showed up, they just got more testing miles and make Audi consider what are we doing with this team. Yep,
Yeah, pit stop
nothing more to say.
practice. Yeah, hats
Fair enough.
off.
Haas, Hülkenberg P9, Magnussen DNF, stellar drive by Hülkenberg. Unfortunate for Magnussen, really, because he was doing all right up to that point. Magnussen, yeah, he got a puncture on lap 50, tapped the wall slightly at turn 5, I think, and then retired, I think, on lap 61. Hülkenberg doing Hülkenberg things. I mean, you look at this man's career, and it's just impressive that he's A, been able to come back into F1 in the first place after everything else that's been going on, but then to be having a year that he's been having this year with that car and driving the absolute arse off it, just remarkable. And he's looking at that stake, that Sauber for next year, going, oh, I really hope Audi are doing some stuff for 26, because
Oh
if this is what I'm doing this year and that, what the hell do I have to do in that car next year to drive? But then again, even if he gets one point next year, it's probably might be the most satisfying point that he's ever got in his entire career,
Yes.
because we know what that car is capable of.
It's infinitely better than the 0 point stake currently has, so why not?
And so it's going to be one of these Kimi Räikkönen at Lotus in 2013 sort of situations where every time I score a point, you're going to give me a bonus, and then he's going to bankrupt Audi. So that's going to be a hell of an achievement, I think. What did you think of Haas this weekend?
Yeah, I think Hulk did a brilliant job trying to wheels out that Haas, fighting Leclerc in a Ferrari. Dang. I think if there was a safety car, Hulk would have benefited. I mean, yeah, Magnussen just went a little bit too deep, tapped the wall, and it's a bit too hard. Yeah, resulting in the DNF. I think overall, Hulk's career in the Haas this year has been stellar. His qualifying pace is pretty good, I would say. So yeah, I'm not sure what to feel like you guys as well, him heading into Sauber next year, which was going to be Audi in 2026. So yeah.
Yeah, qualifying P6 as well should definitely be given a sticker at the very least, because that was pretty damn good. Alpine, meanwhile, last team on the list, Gasly P17, Ocon P13. Another pretty anonymous race for them as well. Kind of forgot they were there at points during the Grand Prix. Not too much to say. I don't know if you two have anything you wanted to say on them, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, John, you have anything to say?
I mean, probably the fact that they didn't crash into each other should deserve an award at some point at this point.
No crash,
I
no
mean, you've
civil
said it now,
war.
so it's going to happen at some point in the next six Grand Prix, so I welcome that when it happens. We shall move into our winners and spinners, though, before Jonathan curses Alpine any more than they need at this point, because let's face it, they're doing perfectly well by themselves. And we'll start with a cameo from Ellie May, who's put Daniel Ricciardo, which I think we can all agree, for various different reasons, ethics aside, we can all agree with you on that one anyway. I meanwhile have gone for Hülkenberg and Colapinto for reasons we've discussed here. Yeah, just brilliant performance by them, considering the machinery they've got available to them at one of the toughest races on the calendar. But Jonathan, I'll come to you next. Who have you put down for your winner for this weekend?
Yep, I think I actually would actually go for Max. I would think he actually maximized, get it, whatever he could with his weekend. And thanks to the fastest lap from Ricardo, he can just now cruise to P2 for the rest of the Grand Prix and claim his fourth title. Overall, a solid job, well done, even though the car is not doing great. Checo is struggling with it, but yep, he's done all he
Well,
can. And yeah.
I think this is the point though. Even when the car is not there, he's still P2, and it does show the kind of driver he is there. And I think this is, we were talking a little bit before we recorded the podcast, Jonathan, that if he wins the title this year, this could be his best title
Yeah,
to
I would
win, because
agree.
it shows that he can stave off competition in a car that is definitely not the best car on the grid anymore, and he can still maximize. And yes, I do get it, what he's able to achieve week in, week out. So, fair enough. Nathan, you've gone more route one, but also perfectly understandable.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to McLaren. Solid weekend as well. I think for Lando as well, for being able to finally lead into lap one and not actually losing the lead after lap one. So yeah, I think overall very dominant drive from Lando. And yeah, I'm a McLaren fan, so yeah, you know.
Nothing wrong with that at all. Interestingly, for our spinners, we've all chosen the same team, probably for all of the same reasons as well, really, which is RB. I don't think we need to go over that one again, because we're just going to be opening our own wounds, and I don't think that's good for any of our mental health.
I'm very
So at this
surprised you all
point,
went for RB. I'm like, dang, yeah,
I
interesting.
know Stroll and Perez are right there as well, so it's bad when they kind of get out of it.
Yeah, true, but I mean, I guess RB just had a bit more visibility. Stroll just existed, Sauber existed, and Perez, besides
Sell
the
bridges, I
impressive.
completely forgot about them. I didn't even think about them. That's how quickly I glossed over them in this one.
And I mean, Perez, besides his impressive Baku weekend, he hasn't been doing great, especially even post-summer break. So it's not that unusual for his P10.
No,
But
very,
RB is
very
in
true.
a new level of spinner, so yeah.
I'll move quickly into our predictions review, and 0 points for pole position from what we made in our previous episode for Singapore. 1 point for Ellie Mae for a Norris win, so she keeps extending her gap as per usual. 0 points of fastest lap, although I really wish I'd put Daniel Ricciardo, because that seems the kind of thing I would have done, so damn me for that. I might have to put him for Austin, regardless of whether he's there or not, and just see if I can manifest something that way. And 0 points for wild prediction. Fantasy F1 wise for Singapore, take a stroll, book the win there with 241 points. Laws by Gunter Steiner, 236 points in P2. And follow Trackside Hub 2 in P3 with 234 points. Also, a Team Nitro RX in P6, Midbed Racing in P9, Extra Magnifico Terrestri P22, and Bulls on Speed P37. You might want to take Logan Sargeant out of your team, as he's not getting you any points at all. Overall, take a stroll is in the lead with 3,867 points. What's the Racing Point? P2, 3,796 points. And Doors by Gunter Steiner in P3 with 3,771 points. On the curbs in P11, Midbeds Racing P14, Ellie Mae's podcast team P21, and The Greatest Moustache still consistently in P37. Definitely not the greatest team. Before we conclude, do you two have anything else you'd like to comment on with regards to the Singapore Grand Prix?
I guess as mentioned, the only thing that surprised us was it was just marginally better than Monaco. We would expect it a lot better, but oh well, I guess on to Austin.
Yeah, I mean, considering the safety car track record at Singapore, I was expecting a lot more, but I mean, you just gotta live with what you can get. So yeah.
Which point I will say that, Jesse, if you're listening to this, you can put this on the prediction sheet for next year and say that we'll have a much better 2025 Singapore Grand Prix, because Daniel Ricciardo will win it. That is all we've got time for on this week's episode, though. In the meantime, if people want to find more of yourself, Nathan and Jonathan, where can the people find you?
Yep, so we have a LinkedIn page. So you can just find us on Race Recap on LinkedIn. We do race previews and race findings as well. We have a newsletter. So that's on my personal profile, so you can go and subscribe to that. And we have podcasts as well. It's called Race Pod. So we do a monthly release every month where we basically bring you all the off-track news that occur during the particular month, as well as cover some news surrounding the wider motorsports community. So yeah, it's that.
Perfect. Do go and check that out. We'll stick links to all of that in the description of this episode. If you want more from me in the meantime, you can find me via social media by searching up for t.alvesdaily. on the curbs, and you'll find everything through there. We'll have an F1 Academy review of the last two rounds coming at some point in the not too distant future before Austin, so keep your eyes and ears peeled on the Uncut Podcast pages for that as well. And yeah, I think that's about it for now. We've got a bit of a break now until Austin, which we're going to need for our emotional health more than anything else. Thank you, RB, once again for that. And in the meantime, thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again soon.